the gospel according to John explicitly states its purpose at the end of its 20th chapter. These are written that ye might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing ye might have life through his name. And so it should be no surprise that it is the gospel according to John that especially explains the reason for unbelief. It explains the reasons for unbelief more than the other three gospel accounts, and more than do any of the other books of the Bible. John 12, which we read earlier, in verses 37 through 42, John 12 gives three reasons why some people did not and some people do not believe in Jesus. The first reason is from Old Testament prophecy. John 12, verse 37. Though Jesus had done so many miracles before them, yet they believed not on him, in order that the saying of Isaiah might be fulfilled, which he spake, Lord, who hath believed our report, and to whom hath the arm of the Lord been revealed? Isaiah 53 had predicted that most of the Jews would not believe in Jesus. Therefore, when Jesus came, few people believed in him. That's the argument from Old Testament prophecy for unbelief. Then, the argument is given from eternal reprobation and its outworking in verses 39 and 40. Therefore, they could not believe. They were not able, they had no capacity to believe, because that Isaiah also said, God hath blinded their eyes and hardened their heart, so that they should not see with their eyes nor understand with their heart and be converted. So they couldn't believe, number one, because of Old Testament prophecy, this had been predicted, and they couldn't believe, number two, because of eternal reprobation working itself in time in the hardening of their heart in unbelief. And then John 12 gives a third reason why some people did not believe. This one has to do with church polity, or, to be more precise, a fear of unjust excommunication. Verse 42 of John 12. Nevertheless, among the chief rulers also many believed on him. And here believed means they realized, yes, he is the Messiah. But it wasn't true faith. But, the passage goes on to say, because of the Pharisees, they did not confess him, which proves that it wasn't true faith, lest they should be put out of the synagogue. That is, they were fearful that if they confessed Jesus publicly, they would be excommunicated. So they decided, no, we're not going to believe in him. And this brings us to tonight's text, which also gives three reasons, three different reasons, why some people back then did not believe, and indeed why some people right now do not believe. Let's read it, John 5, verses 40 through 44. John 5, verse 40, and ye will not come to me, that ye might have life. I receive not honor from men, but I know you, that ye have not the love of God in you. I am come in my Father's name, and ye receive me not. If another shall come in his own name, him ye will receive. How can ye believe, which receive honor one of another, and seek not the honor that cometh from God only? In general, how do the three reasons for unbelief in John 5 compare with the three reasons for unbelief in John 12? Well, first of all, the three reasons given here in John 5 are more universal and they're less Jewish. Secondly, the reasons given in this passage are more inward, inside people's hearts, lying within human beings, than the other reasons. And thirdly, the reasons given here lie more in the realm of man's responsibility. You don't believe, and it is entirely your fault for your unbelief. And we will see these things, bear them in mind, as we look more at our text. And obviously, therefore, there are important lessons for us tonight, lessons especially for those who remain in unbelief. Why do you not believe? And also, lessons for believers. Let's consider our text, John 5, verses 40 through 44. Why do people not believe? Well, it's a matter of the will, that number one. It's also, from a different perspective, a matter of love. That's why they don't believe. And thirdly, it is a matter of honor. With that view of honor, they're never going to believe. Why do people not believe in Christ? It's a matter of the will and of love and of honor. Verse 40 reads, "And ye will not come to me that ye might have life." And that word will is not a future will, as in you shall not in the days, months, years ahead come to me. The word will in verse 40 refers to the human activity of desiring and wishing and wanting. The text is saying, Jesus is saying in the text, you, my hearers in the first instance, you do not want or desire to come to me. And especially in John's gospel, coming to Jesus is the same thing as believing in Jesus. The coming is the movement of the soul towards Jesus, as in faith. You do not want to come or believe in me, that ye might have life. That's why you don't believe. And this, and you might be able to put all this together if you remember the previous sermons on John 5, beloved. This is the third of three references to the will in John 5. The first reference to the will is the will of the lame man. He wanted or desired, perfectly understandably, to be healed. John 5, verse 6. When Jesus saw him lie at the pool of Bethesda and knew that he had been now a long time in that condition, he said unto him, "Wilt thou be made whole?" That is, do you want to be healed? Do you desire it? Do you desire it? The second reference to the will in John 5 is the will of Jesus Christ. His desire to regenerate his elect alone. John 5, verse 21. As the Father raiseth up the dead and quickeneth them, even so the Son quickeneth whom he will, or wishes, or desires, or wants to regenerate. So we have the will of the lame man who wanted to be healed. We have the will of Jesus who desires to give the new birth to his elect. And here at the start of our text, we have the will of the unregenerate. And here it's a negative will. You do not want or desire to believe in the Son of God. Ye will not come to me that ye might have life. That's Jesus blaming them for their unbelief. You don't want to believe in me. You don't want it. Now, if you had asked those Jews who had been there that day in Jerusalem, why do you not believe in Jesus? What would they have said? They would have said, well, there's not enough evidence for his claims. But what about the evidence that Jesus has been dealing with in John 5? Here is the lame man who now walks by the power of Jesus. What about the evidence of Christ regenerating people? What about the evidence of Christ judging people and the people themselves feeling it in their consciences as he rebuked them? And what about the evidence of Christ's future resurrection of people, because he who regenerates them, gives them spiritual life in their souls, is going to raise them up bodily in the last day. And he who judges people now, convicting them of their sins, is going to judge them by resurrecting them to condemnation at the last day. And Jesus, in saying, you do not want to come to me that you might have life, is saying, the problem with your unbelief is not that there is insufficient evidence. The problem is with you that you do not want to accept the evidence. That's the problem. Here's another defense that these Jews would have made, and in fact did make, which is why Jesus here is giving us the truth of the matter. There's not enough testimony to Christ's claims. But what has Jesus been doing in John 5, verses 31 through 39? That which we've considered in our last four sermons. There's the witness of John the Baptist, a man who bore witness to the truth as the burning and shining lamp. And you were willing for a season, you were willing, there's another use of that word, for a season to rejoice in that light. And then there's the witness of the Son's works. And then there's the witness of the Father. And then there's the witness of Old Testament Scripture. And the problem is not that there's unreliable or inconsistent testimony to Jesus, or that there's insufficient evidence that he's the Son of God. The problem is that they did not want to receive the testimony or accept the evidence. You do not want to come to me that you might have life. It's your fault. It's the fault of you and what you desire or wish. And what about you? If you are outside of Jesus Christ tonight, you have heard about his mighty works, his glorious miracles, seven of which are treated in the first 11 and 12 chapters of the fourth gospel. You have heard of the amazing teaching of Jesus of Nazareth, so simple and yet so profound. You know about his atoning death on the cross for all the sins of his people, his resurrection from the dead on the third day, and his work of gathering, preserving, and defending his New Testament church for the last 2,000 years. And you too have heard many witnesses regarding Jesus Christ. You have the witness of the Father in the Old Testament Scriptures. You have the witness of the Spirit in the New Testament, what he says to the churches. You have the witness of Christ's church, and especially now here, this church, in preaching, in catechism, in Bible studies, and literature. And the question is, why do you not believe? I need more evidence. I need more testimony. I need more proof. In other words, think about those words, evidence, proof, testimony. Your claim is that the matter pertains to the intellect. But notice here what human faculty, so to speak, what human faculty Jesus speaks of. He says the problem isn't with the intellect, the problem is with the will. Not even here your thinking and how I've got to supply more proof for you, but your willing. You do not want to come to me that ye may have life. The problem then is not with your intellect, so to speak, that you need more evidence, proof, testimony, and that it's the duty of the minister or the Christian church or the Son of God to keep giving you more and more proof until you decide, as the arbiter over truth and godliness, I've had enough. You've proved it to me. The problem lies with the will of man. You don't want to believe in Jesus. And you could say, in one sense, that's a step in the right direction, even to get someone to acknowledge that. Yeah, you're right. I don't want to believe in Jesus. Well, it's obvious. You haven't believed in Jesus. You've chosen not to all your life up to this point. Yeah, you don't want to. And then the question is, why do people not want to believe in Jesus? Why do you not want to believe in Jesus? And that brings us to the second point, because it's not only a matter of the will, it's a matter of love. Let's make the connections. Verse 42 says, I know you, that ye have not the love of God in you. And the love of God here is not referring to God's love for people. It's referring here to these people who do not love God. It's an objective genitive. Verse 43, Jesus continues, I am come in my Father's name, and ye receive me not. And how does one receive Jesus? By believing. I am come in my Father's name, and you believe me not, and therefore receive me not. So putting verses 42 and 43 together, verse 42 says, you don't love God. Verse 43, its first half, says, you don't believe in me. And the connection is this: you don't believe in me because you don't believe God. Verse 42, I know you, that you have not the love of God in you. I am come in my Father's name, and ye believe me not, and therefore ye receive me not. In other words, why do these people not believe in Jesus? Well, they don't want to. That's the first point of the sermon, verse 40. It's a matter of the will. And now the second point of the sermon is, why don't they believe in Jesus? Well, they don't love God. It's a matter of love. And they don't want or desire to believe in Jesus because they don't love God. And, to develop that point a little bit more, they love other things instead of loving God that displace God. Things which to love instead of God in the place of God is sinful and wicked. Now, these Jews, for the umpteenth time in John 5, must have been absolutely appalled at what Jesus said to them. I know you, that you don't have the love of God in you. And it's a wonder that after verse 42, we don't read something like this, at which point the Jewish religious leaders protested most vociferously and grumbled and complained. We do love God. We love his word, and as proof, we study it really hard. We love his worship at his temple and his synagogue. And what do you mean saying you people don't have the love of God in you? And so Jesus goes on to prove that they don't love God, that is the true God. I know you, that you have not the love of God in you. Verse 43, I am come in my Father's name, and ye receive me not. And remember, when Jesus says he comes in the Father's name, he doesn't only mean I'm come as his agent and messenger, and you've rejected me, the messenger. He isn't only saying I'm come as his representative, and you haven't received his representative, which shows you don't love the Father. But Jesus, when he says, I have come in my Father's name, he means I have come to reveal him as the perfect revelation of God, so that he who has seen me has seen the Father. And since you don't love and you don't believe in me, that is proof positive that you do not love God, because I am the perfect image of God and revelation of the Father. He's at it again. He keeps on excoriating and exposing them. And therefore, what these Jews took as love for God and his word and his worship, these things were really something else, something very different, something that was the opposite of love for God. You say you love God, you Jews, but it was merely a love of reading, a love of studying. That's what you loved. And you say, oh, well, we were studying biblical and religious stuff. Okay, you have a love of reading and studying religious materials. And this world is filled with people who have a love for reading and studying religious materials. The false churches and the false religions are stuffed full of people who love that sort of stuff for whatever reason. These Jews also had a love of pontificating religiously and a love of telling other people religiously what to do. Matthew 23, verse 4, they bind heavy burdens and grievous to be borne and lay them on men's shoulders. They love telling everybody what they've got to do and how hard it is. But they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers. That's what they liked. They loved that. These people had a love of praying, because they did pray and they prayed a lot. But they didn't love the one that they claimed to be praying to. They had a love of religiosity. This is what Jesus says in Luke 11, verse 42. Woe unto you, Pharisees, for ye tithe, or give a tenth of, all these little herbs, mint and rue and all manner of herbs, and pass over judgment and the love of God. So they love taking out the wee measures and saying, now here's a tenth of the anise and cumin that I've grown in my back garden. See how religious I am? I've chopped it up and I've given a certain amount to God. Oh, man. Oh, I just love religion. That's what they liked. But they didn't love God. These were people who loved legalism. They loved works righteousness. I've kept these commandments. It makes me feel good about myself. I'm earning with God. I'm better than my neighbor. Oh, don't you just love it? That was their religion. And Jesus told them that all of it, their entire religion, from top to bottom, added up to nothing good. I know you. You don't know yourselves, but I know you. I know you that you have not the love of God in you. I know what's inside you. I know it's not the love of God at all. I know it's not the love of God at all, even apart from my criticisms, all valid and true. But I know you haven't the love of God in you, because I'm the revelation of God and you don't love me, and in fact you want to kill me. And it is exactly the same today with all who hear the gospel of Jesus and do not want to believe in him, and so do not believe in him. It is because of their sinful loves. The Apostle Paul speaks of this in 2 Timothy chapter 3. Here's how it begins. This know also, that in the last days, the period between the first and second comings of Christ, perilous times shall come, for men shall be lovers of their own selves. That's how it begins. And if people are lovers of their own selves, then they're not going to believe in Jesus. Notice how it ends, because there's a long list of sins. Lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, from such turn away. These religious people, you can't really even do a big pile with them. You cannot even say much to them. They're going to reject it all. You're better off just leaving them, walking away, because they're blind leaders of the blind, and they're going to fall into a ditch. What can you do? They're not interested. You don't have the love of God in you. Therefore, you do not, cannot receive me by believing in me. That if someone has in their heart the love of money, which is the root of all sorts of evil, as 1 Timothy 6 says, then they cannot believe in Jesus. If someone loves fornication or pornography, they can't love Jesus. They can't believe in Jesus. They don't want to believe in Jesus, because they will and want and wish to follow what they love. Isn't that true? Isn't that true of all of us psychologically? When we have the option, we do what we want to do. There's nothing wrong with that per se, to do what you want to do, because God does what he wants to do. The people in heaven do what they want to do. The problem is that we don't want to do the things that we should want to do. The problem is if you don't want to do the things that are right. And then, of course, this loving, it's not only loving the wrong things instead of God and his cause, it's loving things which are in themselves sinful, or things which aren't in themselves sinful but become sinful because they're disordered. John chapter 3, after the great exhortation to believe, goes on to say, verse 18, he that believeth on the Son is not condemned, but he that believeth not is condemned already, because he hath not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. And this is the condemnation, that light is come into the world, and men loved darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. They love darkness rather than light because their deeds are evil. They don't love God, therefore they can't believe in Jesus. And a man who loves darkness is in no spiritual condition to believe in Jesus. It's impossible. And of course, this applies too to the love of all false gods or idols in the false religions and in the false churches. I know you, that ye have not the love of God in you. For I am come in my Father's name, and ye receive me not. Love the false gods? You can't believe in Jesus unless God changes you so you no longer love idols. Let's summarize. Why do people not believe in Jesus according to our text? They will not. They don't want to believe in him. They don't desire him. That's the first point. Well, why do they not desire or will to believe? Well, it's because of disordered and sinful loves. The second point. And people desire what they love. And now, in our third point, why do people not want to believe? It's because not only of these sinful loves, it's because of a false honor. And people want or choose what they believe to be honorable. And if someone's the wrong view of honor, that's deep in their heart, psychologically, spiritually, they can't believe. They don't want to believe. They're trapped in their sins. Verse 44, this is what Jesus says. How can ye believe? That is, you can't believe. You who receive honor one of another and seek not the honor that cometh from God only. And this third point in our sermon in John 5 is an aspect of the third point in John 12. John 12, verses 42 and 43, here was the third point. I only quoted verse 42 earlier. Among the chief rulers, many also believed in him. Yeah, they realized, you know what, he actually is the Messiah. But because of the Pharisees, they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue. They realized they'd be excommunicated. And now verse 43, for they loved the praise of men more than the praise of God. And that word praise, used twice in verse 43, is the same Greek word that's translated twice as honor in John 5, verse 44, usually translated by glory. How can ye believe which receive glory one of another and seek not the glory that cometh from God only or from the only true God? And what Jesus is saying here fits perfectly with the sinful honor and glory that these Jews, especially their leaders, sought of men, and it comes up time and time again in the gospel accounts. Jesus deals with this, for instance, in his Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 6. Charitable deeds, giving to help the poor. Matthew 6, verse 2, Jesus told his disciples, when thou doest thine alms, do not sound a trumpet before thee, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory of men. See, I'm helping the poor. Look at that. John 6, verse 5, Matthew 6, verse 5, rather. Jesus here deals with prayer. When thou prayest, thou shalt not be as the hypocrites are, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and in the corners of the streets in order that they may be seen of men. Verse 16 deals with fasting. When ye fast, be not as the hypocrites of a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces that they may appear unto men to fast. They're seeking honor and glory of men for their religion. Therefore, they can't believe. Someone with that mindset cannot believe. Matthew chapter 23, because this was a major factor that Jesus exposed in this religion of the Jews. Matthew 23, verse 5. All their works they do to be seen of men. All of them. They make broad their phylacteries and enlarge the borders of their garments, the blue tails at the bottom of the coats. They love the uppermost rooms at feasts and the chief seats in the synagogues. They're seeking honor of men. Look at that. I must be going really well in the Jewish religion. I've got the best seat. Verse 7, they love the greetings in the markets and to be called of men, Rabbi, Rabbi. And then later Jesus says, woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, verse 27, for ye are like whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward, but are within full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. Even so, ye also outwardly appear righteous unto men, but within ye are full of hypocrisy and iniquity. John 5, verse 44. How can you believe, which receive honor one of another, and seek not the honor that cometh from God only? It's a psychological impossibility. You want honor to be seen of men, therefore you can't want honor from God. Therefore you cannot believe. It's a moral impossibility. No human mind can do both things at the same time. Spiritually, can't be done. And why is that? Because true faith in Jesus Christ is concerned with God and his glory. In the sphere of faith, the individual sinful human being stands alone before God, and other people are actually irrelevant in that moment. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter about the rest of the world. True faith is not only looking away from oneself, but true faith involves looking away from other people. That's why true faith is actually liberating, because of this soul-killing fear of what everybody else is going to think about me. True faith is looking away from self and other people. It's looking to Jesus as the revelation of God. This takes us right back to the Reformation. True faith, man before God, lost and exposed, and his only hope is in Jesus Christ. Whereas if you're trapped in the religion of the Pharisees, besides all of its work righteousness, and it's all about receiving honor one of another, well, you really are stuck. True faith, therefore, is sincere and undivided. If you believe with all your heart, Philip told the Ethiopian eunuch, you may be baptized with all your heart. Not, I'm looking up to God, seeking salvation in Jesus, but my other eye is worried of what everybody's going to think about me. That's not true faith. Looking to God in Jesus alone. And in fact, this was something that the prophet Habakkuk, in his great statement about faith, quoted in the New Testament, something that Habakkuk states clearly. I'm referring to Habakkuk 2, verse 4, which reads, behold, his soul, which is lifted up, is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith. Two types of people. The one whose soul is lifted up, or proud. That's what lifted up means there. One person, his soul is lifted up or proud. His soul isn't upright in him. But the just, on the other hand, he lives by faith. Because faith, looking to God as an exposed, guilty sinner, can't be proud. But the other one is all puffed up. And faith is found where there is humility. I'm a sinner. I'm lost and I'm undone. Jesus Christ is Savior and Lord. His cross is my covering from the wrath of God against sin. And his cross means my life from the dead. And Jesus turns to the religious Jews and says, how can you believe? How can you believe in me? Even when I talk to you about the works that the Father has given me, even when I give you four testimonies, how can you believe? It's completely impossible. Because your religion is all about receiving honor one of another, and you couldn't care less about the true honor which comes from God. You cannot believe. Of course you can't believe. Consider for a moment, in applying this to ourselves, a young person who is awakened spiritually to his sinfulness and lost condition through the gospel, and he's worried about what his friends at school or university will think. As long as that person is primarily worried about what these people are going to think and how he might get into trouble and is they're going to look down their nose at him and laugh at him, when he's stuck in that, it's spiritually impossible for him to believe. I'm not now talking about regeneration or being elect. I'm talking about the psychological condition of the sinner. You cannot believe in a position like that. If you get someone and he reads a gospel tract and he believes, you know, that's true, I am going to perish in my sins. Ah, but you know, I've got neighbours down there and my family and uncle so-and-so will laugh me out of town. You can't believe while you think like that. Imagine a Roman Catholic priest who reads the scriptures, let's say he's reading the book of Romans, and he says, you know what? Martin Luther was right. Or some Muslim imam, and it strikes him that for all his religiosity, he has no peace with God. Or some actor caught up in the rat race where they're forever congratulating each other with awards and ceremonies. And he hears the word of Jesus. And then he begins to sweat with cold sweat. Here's verse 44. How can you believe which receive honor one of another and seek not the honor that cometh from God only? Well, you can't. And a whole lot of people have realized this and they turn their back and they go away. Who then can be saved? That's the question you should be asking. The disciples asked that after Jesus' words with the rich young ruler. And Jesus said, with men, this is impossible. And then he added, but with God, all things are possible. Salvation does not, and salvation cannot lie with man's will. Romans 9, verse 16. So then, it, that is salvation, is not of man that willeth, man's free will, nor of man that runneth, man's exertions and works, but it is of God that showeth mercy, wholly of God, not man's will, not man's works. Because man's will is bound in sin. He cannot believe. And he doesn't want to believe. You do not want to come to me that ye might have life, because you're trapped with sinful loves and with false views of honor and glory. And when you live in that psychological, moral, spiritual world, it's completely impossible for you. Or, to put it slightly differently, you're totally depraved. Your evil inclinations bind you so that you never really desire the truth. No escape is possible from man. But there's the will of Jesus. As the Father raiseth up the dead and quickeneth them, even so the Son quickeneth or giveth life to whom he will. And when Jesus gives life to whom he wills or wishes or wants, then verse 40 is no longer true. Jesus doesn't say of the one who's born again, you don't want to come to me that you might have life. Instead, the opposite of true. I have given you the new birth. By my will, I have changed your will, so you do want to come to me that you might have life. In fact, you want to come to me like you have never wanted anything in your life before. Because God's people are made willing in the day of his power by irresistible grace that changes a totally depraved, bound will to an utterly willing will that wants the will of God and seeks salvation in Jesus. And those who are unconverted are called to believe. And if you don't believe, it's your fault because you didn't want to, because you love the wrong things, because you've got a wrong view of honor, and the Bible has laid it out for you in our text. And you, who are the children of God, your call is to believe ever more deeply, understand this faith, where it came from, what a wonder it is, and what a gracious gift. Keep coming to Jesus. And whosoever will, whosoever wants, whosoever desires it or wishes it, may come and drink the water of life abundantly and forever. Amen. Our Father in heaven, we thank thee for the light of thy word. Regenerate the unregenerate. Renew our wills so that we want to come ever more to Jesus, and that we love the right things and seek the true honor from thee alone. Amen.